How much should we know about the Fed?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A House panel has voted in favor of letting Congress take a closer look at the Federal Reserve, things such as auditing the Fed's books and examining its decision-making. Opponents say such a measure would make it impossible for the Fed to do its job properly. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us live from our New York Bureau this morning. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
So this amendment was sponsored by Texas Republican Ron Paul, who has repeatedly called for getting rid of the Fed altogether. I mean, he's been trying to pass this bill for a while, right?
Absolutely. You have to give this man some credit for perseverance. He's introduced a version of this bill in Congress every year since the early 1980s.
So what exactly does the measure say?
It would have the Government Accountability Office, or the GAO, that's Congress's investigative arm, audit everything that the Fed does. So that means crisis actions like bailouts and emergency lending, which already get audited. But it would also mean business the Fed does with other central banks and discussions about interest rates.
And that's the most controversial thing, right?
Right. There's been a law for something like 30 years that keeps Congress from seeing certain things the Fed does. So pretty much anything to do with monetary policy. That law's been on the books because people thought the Fed needed to be protected from political pressure in order to be able to do its job properly.
So does anybody still think that?
Yes. Barney Frank is still very much in favor of shielding that part of the Fed's job. And in today's Washington Post, a former Fed official gives what he calls a not very hypothetical example of how Congress could really pressure the Fed as it was trying to set its monetary policy.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth with us from our New York Bureau. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
Stocks are all over the place this morning. European shares are up right now, generally under 0.5%. In Asia, stocks close mostly lower. Japan's central bank keeping its key interest rate at just a hair above zero. On Wall Street yesterday, a lackluster first-time jobless claims report and some other weak economic data kept investors a little subdued. NASDAQ shares tanked by more than 1.5%. The S&P came back about 1.33%, and the Dow was off 93 points to close at 10,332. Chicago hosts about 100 major trade shows, conventions, and meetings each year. All that brings in hundreds of millions of dollars. But within the past week, a couple of trade groups have announced they're leaving town. And today there's talk that the National Restaurant Association might look elsewhere as well. Chicago Public Radio's Susie Ahn brings us this report.
Since the 1970s, the Plastics Industry Trade Association has held its trade show in Chicago. But Plastics' Barry Eisenberg says Chicago's labor costs are too high.
It takes about a week to set up the show and a week after the exhibition is over to break down and ship things out. And so all that labor cost, all that shipping costs, we found to be very expensive.
Eisenberg says the plastic show is moving to Orlando, where it expects to save about $20 million. Last week, a trade show on healthcare said it's leaving for Las Vegas. Derek Hull of the National Restaurant Association wouldn't comment on rumors that his group would follow suit, but he says Chicago's labor costs have always been a challenge.
Many of our exhibitors continue to voice their concerns. Those exhibiting companies do conventions elsewhere in the country, including the cities of Orlando and Vegas.
Chicago's convention leaders say they're trying to make Chicago more competitive. They say other cities have the backing of state and local governments, while Chicago operates completely from trade show revenue. From Chicago, I'm Susie Yon for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
Dreaming of an island getaway this holiday? Royal Caribbean International thinks they have just the thing, a boat the size of an island. It's the biggest cruise ship ever made, but you can imagine there are some challenges of setting sail in these turbulent economic waters. Here's Marketplace's Rico Galliano.
The boat is called the Oasis of the Seas. It's a quarter of a mile long, with accommodations for over 6,000 passengers. The ship has seven areas Royal Caribbean calls neighborhoods, and CEO Adam Goldstein says that's not the only thing it has in common with the city. For example,
our Central Park, which is the length of a football field and 19 meters wide, will have 12,000 plants and trees. There's an area called Boardwalk. And about nine decks above Boardwalk, our guests will be able to zip wire across the open space diagonally.
Even Gottlieb seems to understand the whole thing sounds crazy.
You note that I said all of that with a straight face. Well, you don't know that because I'm on the radio, but I'm telling you that I said all of that with a straight face.
But, he says, cruise ships have been getting larger for years as passengers demand more choices of stuff to do on board. The boat made financial sense, too, when construction began 4 years ago in the middle of an economic boom. But launching a ship this size in a recession? Some experts find that a little crazy.
I mean, I think the cruise line is thinking to itself, what have we done here?
Christopher Elliott is a travel writer and an ombudsman for National Geographic. He says Oasis of the Seas still has vacancies for its December holiday cruises, and unlike air travel, cruises don't tend to see a lot of late bookings.
A last-minute cruise booking is a booking that's done a month or two in advance. People normally book their cruises 6-7 months in advance. So they're off to a slow start.
Royal Caribbean's Adam Gottlieb admits the Oasis isn't full yet, but he insists the company is happy with ticket sales so far, given the economy. And even experts agree cruise lines are better poised than airlines to weather economic storms, since the price of a cruise covers meals and lodging.
A cruise is thought of as a value vacation because it's billed as an all-inclusive product. People are drawn to that during tough economic times.
Royal Caribbean certainly hopes so. It's set to launch a second, equally big boat next November. I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
And finally, the U.S. House voted last month to incorporate a service station in Plains, Georgia, as a part of the National Park Service. The station was once owned by Billy Carter, brother of former President Jimmy Carter. But the $17 million plan to update the station has a taxpayers group up in arms. A spokesman for the Washington-based Taxpayers for Common Sense says there's no reason the Park Service should protect the station because it's not in any danger of being torn down. For its part, the service says it's just a small component of a larger story, the story of the 39th president and his family. Whether that component includes a line of beer, say, which Billy Carter was known to enjoy and endorse, only time will tell. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.